Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Alex Katz is one of the most celebrated and prolific living American painters. And at 95 years old, he's still painting and exhibiting new pieces. His more recent work of the last few decades has focused on places and spaces, natural and urban environments, a slight departure from the portraits of his earlier career, for which he's most famous. But at the Guggenheim, now through February 20th, you can see the many different iterations of Katz's work and the evolution of his style all under one roof, from his work in the early 1940s to present day. One painting was still wet when it was being installed. The exhibition is called Alex Katz Gathering, and it covers nearly 80 years of paintings in more than 150 pieces and strategically placed painted cutouts running up the Guggenheim circular ramps from the first floor of the museum, spiraling all the way up to the top skylight, six floors up. A review in the Washington Post said of the exhibition, "This is the show Frank Lloyd Wright's Airy Spiral has been waiting for all its life." Alex Katz came by our studio to talk about the show and brought along his famous sense of humor, plus a very stylish leather jacket. That's important, you'll hear. He was also joined by Guggenheim curator Catherine Brinson, who organized the exhibition and edited the catalog. Here's our conversation. Alex, what did you think when you were approached about the idea for the show?
Well, this is Richard Armstrong's idea, not mine. And he'd been trying to do something there. Initially, I was supposed to have the show in 2027. And I almost busted up. Then he put it down. I thought it was all over. I didn't think. I was asked by the Wall Street Journal, "Am I satisfied with my life?" You know, in terms of public response, and I said, "Yes, except I'll never have a big show in New York City." And then the reviewer said, "Well, you never can tell." And 2 weeks later, it happened. Had a decent date.
Yeah. You put it out into the universe and it happened.
Yeah.
So, Catherine, the Washington Post said this is, quote, "the show that Frank Lloyd Wright's spectacular building has been waiting for all of its life."
Yeah. Well, Catherine squeezed it in.
Well, it's interesting because at the Guggenheim, you have two different sort of spatial experiences. You have these very intimate experiences in what we call the bays along the ramps, mm-hmm. Where you're in these sort of mini enclosures. But then you also have this unique vista where you're standing back and viewing from across the rotunda, but also from above and from below. So it was a really interesting process when we were installing. And I think even with all your many, many decades of installation experience, Alex, this was new for you, which is you place a painting and then you have to race around the ramp and see how it looks from across, mm-hmm. from above, from below. And because Alex's work has an intensely crystallized, sort of almost graphic quality in some ways, it really telegraphs across the rotunda.
Alex, did you see any of your work in a different way? Was there one particular painting environment?
We see your work, and some of it seems more interesting, some of it seems less interesting. And the double one of Ada with the two blues, I realize is a real good painting. I never thought it was. I thought it was okay. And you change every time you see them. The paintings actually change in time. Mm. You know, my paintings to me. And I think all paintings change in time, and the old ones change slower. They don't change as quick as new ones.
That's interesting. Why do you think the old ones change slower than new ones?
Well, they're more codified in a way. and less subject to fashion. And when I was an art student, I wanted to learn. I didn't have any art history background, so I got books of all the books of El Greco I could get, and they're all printed in the 19th century. And he was very popular when I was in art school. And in the 19th century, he was considered, they said he had astigmatism and was a really minor painter. And it changed in the 20th century. Then he went out of fashion. Now he's back again, you know. So everyone's subject to fashion.
You studied fashion for a while when you were a boy, right?
No, I just went to a high school that was so degenerate, all we had was dancing and fashion. The most important thing is, what will I wear today?
I was going to say, you are fashionable. You were
always, yeah.
Last time we spoke, you were wearing a purple and teal tracksuit. The pictures from one of the Guggenheim events, you have a white suit on and a gold tie. Do you like fashion? Is it a thing for you?
Yeah, I love fashion. I love fashion. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad, but it always changes. That's the constant thing with fashion. And you're taught that a painting is a joy forever, you know, and it's a great masterpiece and never changes. But they change. Some of them, they're very refined. They get kind of boring.
Mm. It's interesting that you should mention Alex's tracksuit, because there's a self-portrait called Track Jacket from the mid-50s in the show. And it's interesting that Alex will often title a work after a garment rather than the person. So you have the black dress, the track jacket, the black scarf.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
it
so
seems
on.
More distinct somehow than calling it Ada 62. Something, you know.
My guests are Alex Katz and Catherine Brinson. We are talking about Alex Katz gathering at the Guggenheim. It's through February 20th. Catherine, did you always know you were going to call it Gathering? What was the workshopping of the title like?
That's such a good question. I was struggling to find the right title because you want something that's really flexible, that's really able to contain a lot of different meanings, so it's not too didactic. And Alex is very engaged with poetry, always has been. Many of the subjects in the show are poets, and I would say that's one of your primary sources of inspiration. So I was working my way through the complete works of the New York School poets, and Frank O'Hara and James Schuyler are particularly important to Alex. And there's a poem by Schuyler called Salute, which it recalls this intention of gathering a posy of meadow flowers and studying them before they wilt. And that idea of kind of capturing the passing moment is really central to Alex's practice. And it had this word gathering in. And then it struck me that a retrospective is also a gathering. You're gathering together a life's work and presenting it in a new way. And of course, lots of different interpretations.
I was very happy to have a Jimmy Schuyler poem on the back of the catalog. That was great.
Your son Vincent's a poet, correct? Vincent is a poet?
No.
And Vincent, we hear Vincent in the show. There's an audio component, and I think he's talking about Frank O'Hara. Is that right?
That's right. Yes, we thought we could feature the voices of those sitters that are still with us, because Alex really represents this amazing, very vibrant cultural milieu through the ages of New York City in the post-war period. And we had people like Meredith Monk and Anne Waldman, Bill T. Jones, Vincent speak on the audio guide.
Yeah, I was born lucky. You know, I went to school in the late 40s, and when I got out of school, there was this fantastic art scene, fantastic poetry scene, fantastic dance scene, and fantastic jazz all going on. And you'd be an idiot not to be a part of it, you know.
What is it you like about portraiture work, Alex?
Well, it's the nature of appearance. Most portraits, and they're great paintings, tell you too much about the person. You know, like a Titian say, this little guy is a rich, powerful man, you know? And Rembrandt tells you how sad life is. And I wanted to just deal with this, what something looks like, and leave all that content out. And that was kind of a challenge to just really try to see something.
How do you think your own portraiture work evolved over time? Because we see some of the early work and the faces aren't quite as distinct and clear.
Well, I was more involved with the image and the paint with the early work, you know. But I got to the portraits, started in 1958. I'd been out of art school 8 years. And we were in a cafeteria at 4 a.m. and some guy says, I want to get the expression in the eyes right. I said, this is about time for me to stop doing what I'm doing and try to do that, you know.
My guests are Alex Katz and Catherine Brinson. We're talking about Alex Katz Gathering at the Guggenheim. Catherine, what stood out to you really starkly, a thing that really grabbed you immediately without even putting on your curator art historian brain when you first saw the early work against the later work?
What struck me first is how there's a circularity that in the late work, Alex is in some ways returning to the looseness and the openness of the gesture in the very early work, but on a really sublime scale and even more pared down to the essentials. He's really just painting light and nature and the passing of time. And I think the seeds of that are there in those very, very early works of the early to mid 50s. And then you move away from that, Alex, in the middle of your career, and then it comes back on this different scale.
Why do you think it comes back around, Alex?
I got bored with these things, and I wanted to see whether I could get away with it, you know, with more. And I think the middle period, where the work was kind of tight, I had something to prove that that these are legitimate paintings and very tight. And the late things are sort of like what I'm doing now is complete mystery. You know, there's no on a lot of the landscapes, there's no preparation. It's mostly in my head. And then we start, we just go right in and try to do it like the early ones, but on a much bigger scale. And I have a lot more control. The unconscious is developed.
When you're saying the work was tight during that middle period, what do you mean by tight?
Oh, there's a lot of details focused very well.
You know? Were you not allowing yourself out to go beyond the details? Were the details?
Well, they don't. I don't think they get. They stop you. They stop the paint or stop the image. But they do focus differently than a painting that a big painting that focuses at 50 feet or 40 feet. Yeah.
You're still painting today, obviously.
Yep, painted today.
You painted today, really?
Yeah.
Love that. Are you a morning painter, an afternoon painter?
Well, I can sketch any time because I did a lot of night paintings, and I actually painted outdoors at night in New York City. It's kind of wild. But when I want to do a bit large painting, I generally like to do it in the morning. I have a little more energy.
Mm-hmm. Alex, you've painted the building that we're in quite a few times over the years, I believe, from across.
I painted across the
rooftops,
the windows
of Soho.
And stuff around me.
Really?
Yeah.
Now I want to see those.
There's a painting called Varick in the Guggenheim show.
Yeah, one where the cornice is gone. No, it's.
Where is it on the rotunda? I'm going to go back
middle.
And look. Right in the middle?
Yeah, it's on the beginning of the fifth ramp.
You're listening to my conversation with the artist Alex Katz and curator Catherine Brinson about the new Guggenheim exhibition, Alex Katz Gathering. We'll be right back. This is All of It. I'm Allison Stewart. You're listening to my conversation with the artist Alex Katz and curator Catherine Brinson about the new Guggenheim show, Alex Katz Gathering. In more than 150 pieces and along the Guggenheim's six ramps, the show traces nearly 80 years of Katz's work, from his earliest experiments through his work from this year. Here's more of our conversation.
People can hear you're a New Yorker, you're a proud New Yorker, but you spend a lot of time in Maine, and Maine is very well represented in the show. Painters often talk about the light in Maine. Is there something special about the light in Maine?
Well, it's special to, once you go further north, there's less light and more color. And Maine is enough so there's a difference between it and New York. And when I saw that Maine light, I really liked it. And I think the light makes more for an all-over painting that spreads. You know, I was trying to get away from Picasso and Matisse, and Bonnard spreads his light, you know. Mm-hmm. And so the light is more important than the forms.
Are you a different kind of painter when you paint in Maine versus when you paint in New York?
Well, a lot of the main paintings I finish in New York. That's one thing.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess so. I don't know. A little more relaxed.
I was going to ask, a little more relaxed, because there's something about the energy of the city, which is fantastic, but it can also kind of press on you a little bit.
Well, my studio is pretty quiet and isolated, you know, so I don't feel the 42nd Street at all, you know.
How did you think about incorporating the landscapes into the show, Catherine?
Well, I always knew that they would be central to the exhibition. Alex has traditionally been better known, I think it's fair to say, for his figurative work, figurative in the sense of featuring the human figure. And I have always found the landscapes transporting and really revelatory and very emotional. And I was actually rereading this morning, Alex, your quote about Frank O'Hara and how you admire his emotional extension and that you always envied that because you felt you could never achieve it. But I think actually in the landscapes, it's there.
But of the poets, Jimmy is technically the best, and John is fabulous, and Kenneth Koch is, but they never, none of them extended themselves emotionally the way Frank did. And there were lines in his poems that are stuck in my head forever. I trust the sanity of my vessel to live as variously as possible. They were all like Ten Commandments. From Frank, yeah. The other guys wrote beautiful poems. They're all great poets, but Frank's my favorite all-time poet.
There are, I think you estimated hundreds, maybe thousands of paintings of Ada, your wife.
Yeah.
Was she always a willing subject?
Well, she's available, and that's one thing. But she's also like an American beauty with big lips and eyes. And she's also a European beauty. And she's quite amazing. Her parents took her to movies a lot. And she looked at all the gestures. And they became part of her subconscious. So she sort of always has a good gesture. And it comes from parents taking her to movies.
and you always say, Alex, that the gestures are Ada's. You weren't directing
her.
No.
I was doing a shoot in Paris for a fashion magazine, and I had all these models I'm working with, and the photographer says, Ada has more energy in the gestures of Ada, who's standing 100 feet away, than any of these models. Huh. And that's true. And it's sort of like competitive in a way. She's on stage, but the gestures are all subconscious.
They're hers.
Yeah, hers, yeah.
Yeah, and I don't use the word muse in any of the text in the show. I talk about Alex and Ada's partnership or collaboration. And I think there was something really interesting in the way your intimacy with Ada kind of, in some ways, paradoxically, allows you a distance to do a lot of formal experimentation over many decades.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed looking at the doubles, the
paintings
with the doubles.
Yeah, that was my big change. People were doing psychological double portraits, so I wanted to do a double portrait that had no psychology in it at all. So I came up with the idea of a double, and I did the double, and it turned out to be a psychological thriller, and I had to change my ideas about art. My ideas about art was to paint what's in front of you, and when I did that one, I realized I don't have to paint what's in front of me because this picture is much better than my ideas. So you change your ideas by what you're doing.
Yeah.
Ideas are sort of a guide.
How did it feel when you suddenly realized, wow, the way I'm thinking about this is changing?
Well, you get scared a little bit. You get scared and you say, you can't deny that you did it. And once you did it, you say, well, you gotta use it and move on, you know.
My guests are Alex Katz and Catherine Brinson. She's the curator. He's the artist. The name of the show is Alex Katz, Gathering at the Guggenheim. I'd never seen before, and this is me, it's just me. I've never seen before the figures, the wood figures.
The cutouts.
The cutouts are fantastic, and they're really sort of fun the way, I know they're very purposely placed because of eye lines and sight lines, but I felt like I was stumbling upon them a little bit, the way you sort of come upon somebody on the street. What went into the placement of them? Because again, it is very deliberate, but at the same time, it feels very organic, like, oh, I've just come upon these people.
Well, that was actually a bit of one of the few points of negotiation, I think, between me and Alex, was obviously it's very important to Alex that the cutouts are seen from both sides. But our building is, of course, this unspooling, rather narrow ribbon where we need to kind of maintain access. So we sort of carefully positioned the cutouts so that you can see them in the round, but hopefully no one trips over them or anything like that. There's some amazing moments where you see them right up against the parapet wall. And from a distance, they really do look like visitors.
Yeah. Well, I think Catherine was very selective on the cutouts, and I think that was completely successful. You know, what she left out was really important.
It was very important to start with the cutout of Frank O'Hara.
Frank O'Hara.
From the late 50s.
What have you overheard?
On the ramps?
Yes, on the ramps.
I truly feel like the show has brought a lot of joy to New Yorkers. You know, we're in this transitional period where people are spending time in public space and communing with art objects again. And I really feel that joyful energy in the building.
Alex, would you describe for our listeners the paintings that are at the top, the very top? You think you finished the show, and then there's this extra bonus room. It's sort of this little, come here. Look, there's one more thing to show you with enormous pieces of your work.
Well, the landscapes sort of started to get real big in 1990. That's 30 years of them. And the ones I'm most proud of are very large landscapes. And the Guggenheim is made for small abstract paintings. They're made for landscapes, figurative painting. And I've done a lot. When they told me I have the seventh floor, I said, that nails the show down because I can show some of them. Mm-hmm. And I don't think a lot of people really took him seriously.
Until now.
Till now.
I think people have a very emotional response to being in that final gallery.
Yeah, they haven't. They were shown in with Gavin Brown and to relatively small audiences. Mm-hmm. And like when we have Fog, we showed it with Gavin, but it's never been seen until we put it up here because we could not light it properly.
And I would say that gallery is the purest distillation of Alex's career-long engagement with how to paint light within the materiality of mm-hmm. paint on canvas and the kind of impossibility of that. But you keep wrestling with it.
Catherine had a lot of guts to put the all white painting in, and the other one that was 3 weeks old.
It was still wet.
Still wet when they hung it. Because I wasn't sure of the painting. I know it was different. It didn't look bad. But I wasn't sure of it because it was a real extension. The painting with no form whatsoever. You know?
I was in that gallery and I was trying to be cool about it. But Julian Schnabel was there. And very intense. And looking at each painting very intently. It was interesting to watch a artist look at another artist's work.
We've definitely had a lot of painters in the show.
Yeah.
Alex has always been in dialogue with so many different generations.
What is something about the show that you haven't been asked or you haven't been able to, I know you've been doing a lot of press on it, that you want people to think or know about? This is your chance.
Well, I think it's a complete 10, the show. You know, the right place, the right time, and the right show. It's like three things together, and it's like a miracle. And it's a depression in New York, and it comes at that point. Mm. So I think it's like the perfect storm, you know? And we never thought it would be this successful.
Catherine, why do you think it's the right place, the right time, and the right show?
Yeah.
Well, I think our building is so singular and so idiosyncratic, and it can be hard to predict until you bring the work and the architecture together what that alchemy will be.
You can have a very good painter and he controls three quarters of the building, mm-hmm. and that isn't enough for a great show.
Well, I think it's very, when the work and the building do merge successfully, which is of course entirely subjective whether that's attained in this case, I think it becomes very memorable because when you're seeing work in a white cube space anywhere in the world, it doesn't really sort of imprint itself in the same way, whereas you always remember the context of the Guggenheim ramps.
I also think it engages your sense of motion.
True.
You know, it's sight, it's sound, and motion. Because of the spiral and the rotunda.
That sense of ambulation is very present.
Yeah, we control the whole place. And most painters, their studios are too small. They can't control the whole space. They can control what you're looking at, but not across. And when they brought in cardboard replicas, you know, like 2 months ago, and I looked at it, I said, I got that.
You felt it.
So
you knew.
We make these maquettes, full-scale maquettes, but they're in cardboard. They're mock-ups
There's
of
no
the painting.
There's no problem with the coarse space.
And that was really helpful.
Yeah. And I think the first room was, you know, dynamite.
Right.
What you did.
We have this double-height gallery called it's called the High Gallery. That's what we call it at the Guggenheim. And that's the one place where the chronology is broken. So we start in the 40s with the subway drawings and the portrait of Alex's mother. And then there's this brief immersion into the late large-scale landscapes mm-hmm. before we return to the 50s. And I thought it was a nice way to augur what's to come in the career and really establish this pursuit of painting light and painting time.
It also offers some grade A people watching from that high balcony down into that gallery.
We call that the overlook. Yes, that's a wonderful vista.
The name of the show is Alex Katz Gathering. My guests have been Catherine Brinson, the curator, and Alex Katz, the artist. Thank you for spending time with us.
Great.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.